Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent, bi-week number one edition. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. Today on the show, Paul Burmeister, former voice of Notre Dame Radio, last week voice of Peacock, and as Matt loves to talk about, a little EPL talk too, since Paul does that for NBC. But Matt, any big bi-week plans? Are you sneaking your way into a surprising Big Ten game of choice this weekend?
I think I'm going to go see history, Pete. The first ever meeting between FBS schools that both have 700 losses. Indiana, Northwestern at the pop-up stadium on the lakefront in Evanston. Wasn't exactly circled on my calendar preseason. But Indiana, an undefeated football team in Indiana, and going to be probably the first team in college football this year to clinch bowl eligibility, which, again, was not something I had on my preseason bingo card. So looking forward to checking out the Hoosiers, looking forward to going back to that pop-up stadium, which is a really, really cool game day experience and the first one that Northwestern students will be at. So should add a little bit of spice to it. How about you?
I've got multiple junior Irish soccer games to attend. So a little.
I thought we were done with soccer talk.
Love it. No. Soccer talk never ends in my house. Maybe some high school volleyball over at La Lemire, depending on how this week goes. And then there's also a cross country meet to attend. So yeah, it's youth sport. I know your kids are not quite at the youth sports spectacular stage, but mine are. So that's I'll be. When I tweet out my sort of good afternoon or good morning tweet, that usually is Notre Dame Stadium this week, it will be either Rochester, Indiana, or Fort Wayne, or maybe even some flag football with Coach O'Malley, former guest of The Independent. That's also on Sunday afternoon. So it's a lot of youth sports happening in the Sampson household.
It's funny. Today, they had everyone in kindergarten wear a t-shirt or a jersey representing a Hispanic athlete. And we couldn't find it. Like, we had a Stephen Curry kid shirt, but I'm like, no, that doesn't work, honey. We had a WNBA hoodie. We had a Sabrina Ionescu jersey. And then I found an old Pirates Pedro Alvarez t-shirt that I had, but it was just a little too big for my five-year-old. So we just put her in a pink Penn State hoodie that she had from our trip there a couple of years ago. And we went forward with it, but good to keep in mind. We need jerseys or t-shirts of athletes of every race and background to fit every single theme day we'll have throughout kindergarten.
Yeah, you'll have a bunch. Well, Notre Dame is off this weekend. Coach is out on the road recruiting, from the injury front. Kind of a time for Notre Dame to get healthy as much as they can. Still fully expect Boubacar Traoré to be lost for the season, unfortunately, after last weekend's apparent knee injury. That may just be a matter of the announcement at this stage. But, you know, whether it be Christian Gray, shoulder, Jack Kaiser, shoulder, hip, they've got a lot of bumps and bruises. You know, Billy Shrouth coming back from the ankle suffered at Purdue. Jordan Faison, that might be a much more difficult situation for a speed player who's had multiple ankle injuries. So, yeah, it's, you know, and Gabe Rubio coming back potentially for Stanford too. So it, Notre Dame should be healthier when they get back on the field against Stanford in about 10 days than they are right now. And, you know, I think you're sort of looking over Vegas odds and, you know, winning out. And I've had a couple of people send me sort of a compilation of, I believe it would be the FPI over at ESPN and the likelihood or I don't know, long shot of Notre Dame going undefeated. And they sort of have Notre Dame going undefeated or winning out, I should say, at 29%, and Notre Dame being heavy, heavy, heavy favorites in every game they play the rest of the way, save USC, which even there, they're a slight favorite at 51%. So I don't know, you've been sort of checking things out, changed from the preseason to the regular season after everything we've learned about Notre Dame. Like, how much has that actually changed in terms of the people that put money on this kind of stuff?
Well, they don't align with ESPN's FPI, which I believe stands for Football Power Index. And after 6 years of working there, no idea what it means, how it is designed. And I don't think anyone there does either, even when they repeat it. So I went through like every legal sports book in Illinois, looked at every possible Notre Dame odd remaining team and individual for the second half of the year. they're almost a consensus even money to make the playoff.
Yeah. +100 I've seen that across the board about 50%.
The longest odds, interestingly enough, on FanDuel, they're even money to make it. But there's also the yes-no box for them. And if you hit yes on that, it's +126. Again, we're talking about the exact same bet here, so use that. And for no, they're -162. But I was surprised, especially the only over-under for them with wins remaining is DraftKings, which has them at 10. And again, there's some juice there, +130 to go over, -160 to go under. But DraftKings also has them at +115 to make the playoff. -145 to not make it, which the math isn't really mathing for me there because I could be wrong. I thought coming into the year, 10-2 might not cut it as a playoff team. With the way the schedule's played out and with the loss to NIU, I really do think it's every game's an elimination game for them here on out. Again, 12 teams is a lot. And I think we're seeing that now when you see ballots and you see people argue and say, this team's in, this team's not. And are you an AP poll voter? Or do you do the Athletic? Or I'm not either. I do the FWA AA Super 16. And even then, once you get past like 7 or 8, it's like, wait a minute. I'm differentiating one loss teams here, and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I think I had Notre Dame at 12 this past week. So it's not as like far-fetched maybe as I thought it would be for them to get in at 10-2 because 12 teams are going to have to make it. But I still have a hard time seeing, especially with how top heavy the SEC looks this year, I have a hard time seeing Notre Dame making it with another loss.
Yeah, I think, you know, this weekend might be indicative or informative of whether 10-2 would be good enough to make it. If A&M beats Missouri, if Washington beats Michigan, then I think Notre Dame's odds of making the playoffs would creep up. Like, then you're looking at maybe 55% instead of 50% because you'd be peeling some teams away. But if those two go against Notre Dame, if Missouri wins and Michigan wins, then 10-2 becomes, I think, a lot more precarious. But yeah, it's I think just if you look at the FBI, what game do you think is Notre Dame's most likely to win the rest of the way?
Most likely?
Yeah, most likely. What's the highest percentage of victory of Notre Dame? It's actually Stanford.
Okay.
At 95.4%. Florida State in preseason was a 70% chance for Notre Dame to win and is now up to 93%, which is higher than Georgia Tech, higher than Navy, higher than Virginia. That actually is the second highest likelihood win for Notre Dame, which is saying something that beating Florida State is more of a shoe-in than beating Army, Navy, Virginia, or Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and we'll see who the quarterback
is. And we might not get to see DJ Uiagalelei start a third game in Notre Dame Stadium, which is very disappointing.
Clemson's not going to see him this week. And, I mean, if Brock Klein's any bit as good as I've heard he could be, he'll probably stay with that job. I mean, it can't get worse, I would think, if you're Florida State right now. But who knows? I mean, we've got some comments coming in. Patrick Carter, those poor Noles. Did not expect to hear that or read that from anyone's mouth outside of Tallahassee after last year's playoff snub and after last offseason's, you know, victory tour of we're too good for the ACC, but that's where the Seminoles find themselves at right now. There are some other, you know, I want to go back to the preseason first, because we talked about a lot of the preseason odds around Notre Dame and some of their players. Mm-hmm. To make the playoff preseason, they were in the -160 to -170 range. So obviously those odds have come down a bit after the loss to NIU, but they're still not devastating.
Is that the equivalent of like about a 65% chance? Because I thought they were sort of like two out of three times they would have made it based
that
on
that. Sounds about right. I'm not great at math, but it tracks for me. Riley Leonard's over under passing yards on FanDuel preseason was 2,525. Through five games, he's at 750. He's on pace for 1,800. I'd be feeling pretty good right now if I had the under on that. And I don't know what kind of market there is for preseason over under passing yards. But for those who did take that, I wonder if there's a cash out button available to you right now on FanDuel. Because that one looks like it's going to go under.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that one's happening. Which is, I would have put a lot of money on the over on that one in the preseason too.
I would have gone over. He was plus 2,200 to on Bet Rivers to win the Davey O'Brien Award. He was a Davey O'Brien Grade 8 Quarterback of the Week this past week, along with being the Senior Bowl Offensive Player of the Week. His Heisman odds right now are available everywhere, as low as plus 5,500 on DraftKings, as high as plus 25,000 on Circa. It goes that high and actually goes higher. Jeremiah Love to win the Doak Walker Award preseason, plus 9,500 on FanDuel. I will say right now, he's 39th nationally through five games with 363 rushing yards. However, last year's winner, Ollie Gordon, was at 366 through five games. So you're saying there's a chance. And I mentioned Circa for a specific reason. Jeremiah Love, that's the only book you could bet on him to win the Heisman right now, and it's a plus 100,000.
I didn't even know that was possible.
I didn't either. Derek Stevens, Circa CEO, offered $100,000 to UNLV last week to keep Matt Sluka. UNLV said no. You got some change to spare, Derek. Come be a sponsor of the Independent. We'll get your buddy Tim Murray on here every week. We'll do some live shows from VEASAN. And hey, if one of us cashes a Jeremiah Love Heisman ticket, we may be able to become business partners with you. But plus 100,000. I mean, hey, what do you have to lose, really?
Yeah, there's whatever money you apply to that wager, I suppose.
There was also Chris Mitchell to win the Biletnikoff was plus 10,000 on FanDuel. At six catches and 69 yards through five games, I'm not feeling so hot on that one.
Nice.
Bo Collins was plus 8,000 on Bet Rivers, 17 catches, 181 yards, and one touchdown through five games. Also not feeling great about that.
No, Notre Dame is not a lot of like individual excellence on this team.
But
even on defense, because it's like, okay, Ben Morrison to win the Thorpe Award. Well, Will Johnson had a pick six against USC that probably everyone saw. I mean, and you know,
yeah, one Ben Morrison has on the game.
But yeah, I mean, if Ben Morrison goes out and has a pick six at USC and that puts Notre Dame in the playoff, then we might feel differently. Although I feel like people end up voting for these awards by like mid-October. So,
well, I mean, Xavier Watts has what? How many takeaways so far?
So you got two picks,
one forced fumble.
Yeah,
and he won the Nagurski last year on the back of what, seven takeaways, I think.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's very possible. And that, again, it's like he did it against USC in mid-October when people vote on these awards. So who knows? It's not much has changed for me about Notre Dame. Like how they've got to this point has been very bizarre. But this is still, if you make the playoff, successful season, probably. If you don't, definitely not. Now it's just like, I think we spent a lot of time in the preseason figuring out, okay, if Notre Dame hosts, who would they host? And now you're looking at the sort of outlook of the college football playoff and be like, okay, well, could they win a game in Eugene in December? Or going to Penn State, which I think popped up in the Athletics projection model. That was after going to Athens, Georgia popped up in the Athletics projection model, which is not something you would feel good about if you're Notre Dame. So
I would after Saturday. Carson Beck's draft stock's taking worse than Riley Leonard's this year.
Yeah. So I would say that, the idea of Notre Dame going on the road in the playoff and having a chance to make some noise is really, really difficult to see.
It's difficult, but like we'll go to Regine. I hope I pronounced that right. It's a question. What do you say to the people that don't want to make the playoff because they might get beat badly? I'd say I'd rather
another podcast to listen to.
Well, I'd say, yeah, I'd rather get beaten badly than be irrelevant, which is what's going to happen to every team that doesn't make the playoff this year and in future years. If you thought bowl games didn't mean anything the last couple of years, get ready for this year because it's they're really going to be irrelevant. I will say one of the things that I've found very interesting from a national perspective with the 12-team playoff this year is I didn't think I'd be paying as much attention to the Group of Five race. Like if you're Army or Navy right now and you're undefeated, but they're in a conference this year, so they could win a conference championship. Heck, they could play each other 2 weeks in a row in the AAC title game and in the Army Navy game, but they both have a common opponent, non-conference in Notre Dame. And while I fully expect Notre Dame to win both those games, can you imagine an AAC champion, a military academy with a win over Notre Dame? I mean, look, they're both better than NIU, and NIU beat Notre Dame this year, so I don't think it's like a crazy question. But the fact we can like sit here on October 2nd and talk with a straight face about Army or Navy making the playoff, even if they lose to Notre Dame, I think is really, really interesting.
Those games are much more interesting than I would have thought in the summer. And it, in some ways, I feel like the rise of Army and Navy as a potential curious game is more interesting to me than Florida State falling off the table entirely.
Oh, much more interesting, yeah.
You know, Florida State is like Florida State is the anti-America's team. Army and Navy quite literally are America's team.
Can NBC like flex that game to Peacock?
Yeah. Yeah, this would be it would have been a good year for CBS to still have the rights to Army Navy, but ESPN bought that up a few years ago. But yeah, the Army game at Yankee Stadium is like the idea of, I mean, Army was a replacement for Miami, who also was really good. Like
and
that
Army didn't want this game because they just joined a conference and they're like, wait, we have a tough schedule now or tougher. Yeah. Why are we doing Notre Dame?
Yeah, it turns out Army might just be good, and they'll be in the postseason regardless. I mean, they're winning six or seven games. That doesn't seem like going to be an issue for them at all. So, I wasn't prepared for Notre Dame Army at Yankee Stadium in November having playoff implications, maybe for both teams. But that's where we are. This is the new college football world that we're living in. This is actually one of the good things that has come out of all the changes in the sport.
And hopefully the Yankee Stadium will still be hungover from celebrating a Yankee World Series a couple weeks earlier, although I'm not holding my breath. The other part, you talk about winning on the road in the playoff. Well, you can still bet on Notre Dame to win a national championship on all these books. It's a fairly consensus plus 4,000 number. BetRivers has a plus 6,000. Again, I wouldn't exactly go running and say take my money on that right now, but I think they're about plus 2,800 preseason to win it. So it hasn't taken the huge dip that I thought it would, because your path there is going to matter. And without that home game, particularly if it's a home game against a group of five team, it's just really, really difficult.
Yeah, Notre Dame's path to winning the whole thing demanded that not only they host in the first round, but they host as the five seed, maybe the six seed. But that seems like a huge stretch at this point, even going 11-1. Could they host? Yes. Will they jump SEC 2, Big Ten 2? Almost certainly not. So that's tough. That's tough. It Notre Dame's path in the playoff, their path to the playoff is not blocked by Northern Illinois. A favorable path in the playoff, it has been. So that, you know, it may make for a more entertaining playoff game in December if Notre Dame is fortunate enough to make it. But look, I would love to see Notre Dame do some damage in the playoff, because I think that would be a fun story to cover for a program that helped write the new playoff rules. But Notre Dame at Oregon, Notre Dame at Penn State, Notre Dame at Tennessee to start the postseason also would be highly fascinating, even if it would be incredibly difficult.
I mean, as much as Notre Dame would want a home game against a weaker opponent, what's more exciting? What will draw more eyeballs? Boise State at Notre Dame or Notre Dame at Tennessee?
Yeah, not close. I mean, or hey, let's say things get crazy. What about Notre Dame gets in as the 8 seed and Georgia's the 9? That would be fine too.
When you said let's get crazy, I thought you were going to say Notre Dame at A&M rematch.
Oh no, I don't want to see that. But an SEC team in South Bend in December, that would be fine too. I would gladly sort of take in that scene and cover that game. That I think it would be a fascinating story to write. So there's, even though I think Notre Dame is not quite the team either of us thought they were going to be, their path to the playoff really is not that much different than where we were on when we hopped on a plane to fly down to Houston at the end of August.
Yeah. I mean, if they lost that game, presumably they don't overlook NIU and they have the same record they do now, just without that signature win. And again, I think a signature win, at least in the 4-team playoff era, meant more than a bad loss, as we saw. I mean, you mentioned,
yep,
I think in the last episode, you know, they held up Navy as a signature win in 2015 because they lost the two really good teams they played. Who you beat matters, and we'll see what happens to the A&M the rest of the way. A reminder, if you would like independent merch, please go to obviousshirts.com. They have teamed up with us and made some awesome gear, t-shirts, quarter zips, sweatshirts, all great for a fall game day. They've been flying off the shelves. Pete and I wear them all the time. We've been giving them out to our guests, and the response has been very, very positive so far. So thank you to all who have already ordered, and please go to obviousshirts.com for independent merch.
And our other sponsor, thank you to Roback. Polo season has come to an end here in South Bend. Today was long sleeve crew, as I'm wearing now, and vest on top of it on the morning dog walk. But all listeners of the Independent, you can go to Roback and get Notre Dame gear, licensed apparel, basically every quarter zip polo hoodie known to man there as well. Tremendous. It is sort of my my attire / uniform away from the press box. But you can go to Roback.com, use the promo code Irish, get 20% off your first order. That's Roback.com, promo code Irish, 20% off your first order. Now that we have that business out of the way, we can get to the interview. We have Paul Burmeister from NBC. We talked a little bit about calling the game last weekend, also his life as a Notre Dame dad. So without further ado, Paul Burmeister. Pleased to welcome into the Independent a return guest, Paul Burmeister of NBC Sports, called Notre Dame Louisville on Peacock last weekend. You remember him as the radio voice of Notre Dame from the previous seasons, a Notre Dame dad, and most important to me, the guy who's not Rebecca Lowe from NBC's EPL studio coverage, which was, that actually was a Saturday talking point, Paul. Somebody asked, is Notre Dame, what EPL squad is Notre Dame? I came down with Tottenham Hotspur. I don't know if you have any strong feelings on that. I know Matt does not at all.
I thought we were done with this conversation after Saturday night, but go ahead.
You take all comers to the Premier League coverage, Matt. It's never too late. Yeah. You can come on in and check it out. But as for Pete's question, I would say it would have to be one of the big four. You know, maybe one of the Man City or Man United, just because, I mean, everything they do, it's a story. There's a lot of excitement for wins. There's a certain amount of drama for a loss. So I would say one of those two.
Well, on the American football note, you obviously were in South Bend this past weekend and you saw what was hyped pregame as the best home game of the year and certainly lived up to it. I mean, a lot to digest in real time and even after the fact. What was it like to be back on campus in an announcer capacity again? And what were your overall impressions of Louisville and Notre Dame game?
It was really, really fun to be back. It was one that as soon as I got news that I was going to have that opportunity, kind of went through the schedule and like, man, I mean, any game is fun to call in South Bend, but it just so happened, you know, Dan's golf schedule coincided with what turned out to be a huge, huge game. It's not very often you get, whether you're in South Bend or anywhere, a game that matches a pair of top 20 teams. So I felt really lucky to get that. And I certainly felt the combination of kind of the athletic angst and urgency that comes with, hey, we're not quite sure what's going to happen, but we know it's a giant game. I felt that all over campus since I got there on Thursday, and it just kind of built until kickoff on Saturday. So there was a lot of excitement coming in, but there was added a boost of energy, you know, once I got to South Bend. I think everybody there felt the importance of that game.
Yeah, it definitely had some the excitement and like some anxiety rolled into it too. Right. And I thought that that sort of showed in like the style of the game itself, where it was incredibly chippy. I think we saw that post game too, where, you know, Notre Dame was kind of giving it back to Louisville after Louisville gave it to Notre Dame a lot last year. Did you sort of pick up on that as that was going to be a theme of the game ahead of time, you know, when you spend time with the staff on Friday pregame and sit down with the coaches, coordinators, and maybe some players, do you get a sense like a game like that might be coming?
100%. And you never know what you're going to get, not only in South Bend or really any of these campuses where we show up. Coaches may be wearing it on their sleeve, how they're feeling, and it could be their biggest game of the season. They could come in with a smile and be like, every game is the same. We're just excited for the opportunity. You never really know what you're going to get, but we felt it right away. Marcus Freeman came in, and there was definitely on edge. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but you could tell something big was coming within the next day and he couldn't wait to get there. And that was kind of the feeling he had when he was interacting with us. Wasn't a lot of smiling, wasn't a lot of hanging out. It was, this game tomorrow is huge and I can't wait for this kickoff to happen. And so he was the first one we met with, and that was no surprise that he was feeling that way and wasn't afraid to show it. And then Howard Cross was great, guys. I mean, he's like a lot of these Notre Dame student athletes who are upperclassmen or maybe even graduate students, very mature, very kind. But he sat down and said, I'm in a bad mood, guys. I apologize, but I'm not in a good way. I'm pissed off. Everything's been going fine, but it's not good enough, and we got to be better tomorrow. And that wasn't just an intro statement that he had told himself he was going to say. He felt that his entire 10 or 15 minutes with us. And you know, if the head coach is feeling that way, if a leader like Howard Cross is feeling that way, that the rest of the team is feeling that exact same way.
How different was it, both in terms of that attitude that you just described and versus last year being there, you know, for every home game and coming back in, not necessarily dropping in, you know, the place well, but coming in before a big game like this and being met with that kind of like introduction, so to speak. I mean, it sounds like that was pretty different from anything you experienced the first 2 years of the Marcus Freeman era.
There's always the expectation to win every Saturday in South Bend. You guys know that. It's always been that way from the time before we were going there. It'll be that way when we're not going there anymore. But this season's different, and people can dress it up any way they want. But the combination of continuity with a lot of the staff, the talent, especially on defense, the talent coming back on offense and the schedule, the expectations are different this year. And people can talk themselves into saying, yeah, but, or it's always kind of this way. Everything begins with that. This was supposed to be and still can be an outstanding year. So that permeates through every interaction you have, whether it's with a coach, an assistant coach, a player, that you feel that. And you feel that in a lot of different ways. So it's not that we didn't feel urgency a year ago or the expectation to win or the disappointment when it didn't go their way, but it's amplified this year. And it all goes back to the kind of talent they have and the expectations coming in.
You called the Louisville game last year, right? I mean, on, from the radio point of
correct.
View. So you were sort of there to sort of pick up on the tone of that game.
Yeah.
And we'd heard that Marcus had made sort of as a classic college head coach move, right? Like, we're going to play the game on loop in the facility. And I don't think it came up on the broadcast, but it's something that I think you probably came up in your conversations with him. Like, what did he have to say about that? Because that was, I don't know if that's something that you ever had happened at Iowa, but like, just like that motivational maneuver and like why he did it.
We didn't have TVs playing on a loop back in 1993, Pete. I don't think we had a TV in the locker room. There may have been one somewhere in the facility, but I think it was probably in Coach Fry's office. It wasn't playing down in the offensive or defensive locker room. So, I mean, that was clearly something emotionally and mentally that was important to the coaches, to have last year's experience on the mind of the players. And Marcus was great when he talked to us about it. And he brought it up. I'm sure you were there, Pete, whether it was a Monday or Tuesday press conference, and said, I want to use the Louisville game from last year, not as motivation or rubbing their face in it, but as kind of a teaching tool. And we kind of took the conversation from there. And he said, I want everybody to feel the pain together. And he picked out a handful of plays to show one day, half a dozen plays to show the next day, and not just to the offense or the defense, but for the whole team together. See, and what he said, if we're going to learn from this together and get better from it and grow, we're all going to sit right here and feel the pain from it together and talk about it. Said it was kind of like a therapy session. So he wasn't shy about talking about it. And I think it was, as a former athlete, I thought about it. I'm like, I appreciate the way he went about that. If I was 21 years old sitting in that facility, that's something that would have resonated with me. And I think with the kind of energy and spirit that they had throughout, you know, the execution came and went, but I think that fight was always there on Saturday. You know, the way he played that had a lot to do with it.
So the game goes how it goes, Paul. It's drunk from literally the opening kickoff.
Yeah.
All teams fumble it away twice apiece. Comes down to really a bad Louisville play call at the end to get a delay of game on 4th-and-1. What do you think Notre Dame learned from this game? Obviously, learning in a win is better than learning in a loss. But to have that win going into a bye week, what do you think they take from this?
I think the number one takeaway is they can come from behind and have a response. I mean, literally come from behind, but I mean, have the table set in a negative way. It's, you're down by a touchdown. The game's a couple seconds old. I mean, it was a little over a minute old, but they've been in that spot before at home and not responded well. And that happened against lesser teams. So to not only get the win, but to have that kind of personality and those kind of details built in there, boom, terrible mistake. You're down 7-0 to a team that's ranked higher than you. Now what do you got? And they came back with their best quarter, and starting fast was a priority for them from the conversations I had with them during the week. I know that was of the utmost importance, and, you know, fumbling the open kickoff doesn't count as a fast start, but when you're down 7-0 and then your offense, which has been questioned and called into question because the passing game hasn't been that great, you got the nice mix of the run and the pass, and you just start that snowball going. It keeps going for the first quarter. I think that's what you take away, is that you get hit in the mouth right away by your own doing, and you play your best football right after that. And it made such a difference in the crowd, guys. I know, Pete, you were there, but what I said afterward is that win and the way they had to do it changed the air. I know it only changed their record by one, but think about the feeling after some of these wins. It wasn't that great, and that's what happens when you have these kind of expectations. You can go back and pick through the execution all you want, but the air changed after that game in a positive way, you know, at least for a little while. And I think they really, really needed that after the way a lot of September felt.
I agree. It's, I mean, you think they were booed in their first two games,
right?
After winning at Texas A&M, which is like kind of hard to get your head around. But, and especially to go down 7-0, I think the crowd was on edge. But it was just for a second, because they responded so quickly and so positively. And I mean, and so much of that had to do with the way Riley Leonard played early and then again at the end. So I'm actually going to catch up with Jason Garrett about this, but Riley Leonard through the first month of the season, what do you make of what's working, what's not, where and where it can go in the second half?
The obvious way to answer that one, what everybody sees, where it's working with his athleticism and his willingness to run a lot and run hard, and to make that be the part of the offense that the defensive coordinator is most worried about. And I think the one player that's a difference maker, where, you know, pick a team coming up that they're going to play. By the time they get to know Notre Dame's offense on Sunday, when that defensive staff gets together, they're talking about number four. I mean, Jeremiah Love is a real difference maker. Somewhere right after that, they're talking about the fact of how well Riley runs off of that. I know Jadarian didn't have the best outing, but I would imagine he'll be right back in there. So this unique running aspect that Riley plays so much a part of, I think that's where defensive coordinators begin their concern on Sundays. And I think Riley's willingness, you know, that his running was a part of what he did at Duke. I don't know that it was the main part of what he did at Duke. And it kind of feels like right now, at least through September, that's the best thing he did. So his willingness to do that stands out to me. And it's so important now heading into this bye week that it's arrow up for him. I think, you know, like a lot of 22-year-old kids or however old he is, he feels what's going on. He hears the boos. He knows the passing game for a number of those games wasn't quite where he wanted it to be. And to win that kind of game, where the passing game, you know, isn't going to win him the Heisman, but it was a world better than it had been against some lesser teams. I think that momentum will mean a lot, even to a veteran player. So my read on him is that I admire what he's doing in the running game, and I'm curious to see where he takes this positive passing step against Louisville and see if he can continue to build on it in October and November, because as positive as it is, it needs to keep getting better and better and better if they're going to get to where they want to go in December.
Paul, as you say that, I feel like I hear and feel the former quarterback in you coming out as you're talking about Riley Leonard. And it got me thinking, like, when you're calling a game with Jason Garrett or with Colt McCoy, you've done a few games with, like, do you think you guys, you and your analysts, see the game maybe a little bit differently or on a similar wavelength as former quarterbacks? And when you're talking about a Riley Leonard or a Dylan Raiola or whomever you're covering?
I do, and I think about that quite a bit, Matt, and I think about it in the way that I hope it comes out in a positive way, because as I've gotten to know Colt and I've known Jason for a little while longer, and I know my own background, we are quarterback game nerds. I mean, we could talk quarterback play until you guys wanted to get up and be like, geez, those guys are boring. All they do is talk about quarterbacks. And I don't want that to come out on the broadcast. I do want us to notice things that because of our background, especially about the analysts. I mean, most people don't know that I played. So I'm not up there to prove to people that I used to play this game. But maybe I can recognize something or connect a dot through my quarterback lens that can help Jason or Colt bring out a point. But I do hope people recognize or can see or that maybe it enhances that part of the broadcast that, hey, these guys up here know what's going on when it comes to quarterback play. That'd be great if the audience felt that, but I don't want to beat people over the head with it either. I certainly don't want to make people think I'm trying to be an analyst because I played quarterback a million years ago, but it is something we all have a passion for. And if we're doing it right and being sensitive to the whole game, it's definitely my hope and something I think about, Matt, that can make our broadcast maybe feel a little bit different.
What, through the quarterback lens then, just the difference from Miami to Louisville with Riley, just like the short tempo, the layups, I think is how Marcus Freeman described them. Did you get much of a sense of like why those were better last week? Whether it be talking to Marcus or talking to Mike Denbrock or talking to Riley himself, just it seemed like he had some automatic stuff working for him last week that was a little bit inconsistent just 7 days earlier.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys are willing to get a little, as I said, even more quarterback nerdy with me, I mean, so those two layups that everybody talks about against it was against Miami of Ohio, right, where he was rolling out to his right and missed. If you've done that before, especially if it's an early in a game and you're amped up, and those are passes he should hit 99 times out of 100, I'm sure he'd tell you that. It's an easy mistake to make to have that ball sail away from your target rolling to the right because you're ramped up, and unless you remind yourself, hey, I'm rolling out, my momentum is naturally going to take this ball about 5 yards further to the right than I think it's going to. I have to have it come out of my hand like it's almost going to be behind him, or I got to throw it right at him, and then it'll drift that way because your body's going to take you that way anyway. So I think people who have played quarterback watch that, and even though they're like, God, Riley should hit that, it's understandable because it's a very easy mistake to make when you're going to your right. So then you come out against Louisville, he rolls out to his left, technically a harder throw to crank your shoulders around, but you don't have that. You don't have the momentum and excitement that's going to take it over his head if you miss it by a little bit. So he's out rolling to the left. He hits those, he drops back, he hits some touch passes. So I don't think that those layups he missed in that game that everybody talks about, they're a little more understandable to me. And I thought it was really fun to see him move to his left and make things happen that way a couple of times early. And then I was just happy that they allowed him to drop back and read the field. I feel like sometimes, and this is in the abstract, it's not just Riley, a quarterback who's not doing as well as he wants, a coach thinks he's going to help him by trying to make it easy on him. And it's just, it's easier to get your confidence back if they just call a damn play and let you read four different guys and cut it loose and see if you can get it in there. That's how you get it back. You don't get that kind of confidence back by hitting layups. You get it back by making a tough read and a tough throw. And I thought the game was called to let him do that a little bit more.
What kind of challenge is it for you going in covering or calling a Notre Dame game this year when it's your first one 5 weeks in versus when you're with the team every week last year? And how does that change when you're calling a Nebraska game versus when you're calling the Apple Cup versus when you're calling whatever your next game is? What's this season been like for you in that respect?
When you have one team all the time, Matt, I mean, a big part of your preparation is so top of mind, and that's name, number, familiarity, and recognition. And back when I first started calling games, I thought that was all I had to do. I would memorize names and numbers, and I was ready to go. And there's so much more dot connecting in between that has to be done, I've realized. But that main part of calling a game where you see number 24 and like Jack Kaiser comes out of your mouth like a split second later, and you can do that with like 40 guys, that's already there with one team. So I have that more with Notre Dame than other teams just because of the last 6 years I've been with them, but I didn't have it nearly as much. And I recognized that on the Monday of game week. I'm like, I gotta tighten this up to be where I want to be. But that was the biggest difference, is that name, number, recognition wasn't quite as on lock right away early in the week. And I had to work a little harder to get to that point. But when I'm doing Washington State, starting at that point from scratch with both of those teams. So I did feel it and really appreciate that there was a level of knowledge with Notre Dame that I didn't have with some of those other teams.
What kind of a bigger picture question with NBC, and I think when they added the Big Ten and the Peacock sort of broadcast rights on top of it, I think some people around, like not in Notre Dame, were like, okay, is this going to detract from the coverage of Notre Dame? Whereas people inside Notre Dame were like, no, this is actually going to be an enhancement because we're going to have more hours of people talking about Notre Dame football. Like, what? How has that been from your point of view being in it to sort of see how NBC has now made, you know, more of a college football destination opposed to just 6.5 times per year with Notre Dame, where now like I come home and like, yeah, I'm watching Georgia, Alabama on ESPN, but like Illinois, Penn State for a minute was like, that was an intriguing game too. And that's an NBC property. Like how do you feel like the network is like embracing the whole thing of the craziness of college football and it being kind of a wall to wall production?
Wholeheartedly. And I think with a lot of excitement. And it was always fun to be a part of Notre Dame football, even when that was the one college property that we really had. But I think what it's done on the inside, Pete, is made a lot of people who were in love with college football, but didn't really have, or NBC didn't really have the property or the inventory for them to use that passion and that love, because the one property was Notre Dame. Now there are a lot of people that were hoping to be a part of college football that it's a giant part of their fall now. So I think that the excitement level is palpable when you walk into our building for college football. And there are a lot of people now who are in a Notre Dame truck that, you know, they may also be working on a Big Ten game, the week before, the week after. So everybody, in addition to the excitement level, people are working their craft more. So I think it benefits Notre Dame because the people in the truck and oftentimes the people in the booth are thinking college football and working college football year round, instead of a handful of times a year. So just all the way around. I mean, I love that topic because I have sensed the excitement from a lot of different people about college football, you know, times 10, as opposed to when we didn't have quite as much inside the building.
So when the decision is made, whenever that is, last summer, Tony Simeone's taking over radio duties. You're taking on more of a TV role. I'm sure you know Tony. This isn't his first rodeo around Notre Dame, but is there any kind of passing of the torch, any phone call of here's what to do, what not to do? He tried out some touchdown calls with us preseason, and thankfully he hasn't used them any so far. But what's that conversation like?
I've had a great relationship with Tony ever since I first met him. And what I liked about him, when he was the studio host and Ryan and I were calling the games in the booth, you could tell how prepared he was with all the details leading into it. And it's not an automatic in this business that someone's going to have a job that looks like a great job or a cool job, and they're going to treat it that way with their preparation. And Tony always did. That there was no such thing as a game, whether it was the USC game or, you know, pick a game that didn't have quite that amount of, attraction to it. He was always ready to go when I felt that. So that relationship started well because I respected his work ethic. And then he just always had a real joy to being around. And the handful of times I was calling a game for NBC and he came over and did it on the radio side, he and I would talk and, I could tell by the kind of questions he was asking how much he cared about it. So that was one of there were some difficult things about saying goodbye to that job because it was a wonderful job. But, worrying that it would be done the right way was not one of my concerns because Tony, was very ready for it and super excited for it. I actually saw him in the building at NBC this summer. He was calling, I think, field hockey for the Summer Olympics. And we would cross paths and I would see him and I could just see, on his face and in his smile how much he couldn't wait for this job. So I knew he would do well with it and I'm really, really happy for him.
So last thing for me, how's life as a Notre Dame dad treating you? So I know you had the radio gig where you could, in theory, you're going to come out and see your son 6-7 times a year. But as it turns out, maybe kids don't want to hang out with their dads when they're in college as much as you thought.
I know that's apparently still true these days, Pete, that the 18-year-old boys have things they'd rather do than hang out with dad. So I get there on Thursday and we're having a casual staff dinner. We get together and our producer, Steve Greenberg, was great. He was like, tell Ben to come along. And everybody's like, yeah, tell Ben to come. So I text Ben. I'm like, hey, come on over. Everybody says it's cool. It's not just me. Everybody said, yeah. He's like, And he had like two or three other things he was doing. So I didn't see him. I was in town for 48 hours. I didn't see him until after the game. So being a Notre Dame dad so far is a little lonely, Pete, to be honest. I'm hoping it gets better as we get closer to the lacrosse season.
I was going to say, do his teammates like Tyler Buchner, Jordan Faison, are they too big for you too? Or do they at least, you know, show deference?
Sometimes when I see some of his teammates, they remember me from when we had the Premier Lacrosse League on NBC. And it's like, they'll be excited to talk. And I don't really know if he's a fan of that either, of the guys on his team wanting to talk to dad. So it remains a work in progress. Trying to figure this thing
out. Yeah, I don't think I've seen my kids roll their eyes more than when I'm out around Notre Dame and someone comes up and is like, hey, I really like the podcast, or I like that story you did. They're like, oh, God. Like, yeah. So, I mean, maybe you're enjoying that experience as well.
No, I'm enjoying the exact same one. We were there the weekend before, too, and I texted him. He was over in the locker room at Arlotta. And I think they end up spending a lot of time there together. I texted that we were coming over. It was me and my wife and our youngest son. And I pictured us walking up to the locker room and kind of knocking on the door and coming in. He met us like 50 yards outside of the locker room. It was like, hey, guys, what's going on? So that's how it's going. That's the report, Pete.
Well, on that note, I hope things turn up for you in that department. I'm sure it'll be a little bit more exciting come lacrosse season as the Irish chase a three-peat this season, two-time national champion. But, Paul, thanks as always for joining the show. Enjoyed listening to you on the broadcast. Hope you're able to do another one at some point this season at Notre Dame Stadium. But as always, friend of the show, got a t-shirt coming your way. If it's not there already, and we look forward. If you really want to up your credibility with the students at Notre Dame, you'll wear that around. I'm sure Ben will give you a warm embrace and say, where'd you get
that? That was a very nice thing to come home to, that you didn't really see your son much, but you are going to get an independent t-shirt. So it's kind of come out even on the weekend, guys.
Love to hear it.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, guys. Always good to hang out.
Way more parenting talk on this podcast than I was expecting.
Way more EPL talk on this podcast still than I was expecting.
Yeah, I feel bad for people who are neither parents, but also don't like EPL. So this might be a tough listen. Hopefully you like gambling, I guess.
Gambling, free t-shirts, yeah, all that fun stuff. Thanks to Paul for joining us. Thanks to all of you who are watching and have been watching and tuning in and submitting questions every week, post-game and midweek to our live shows on YouTube. Reminder, please subscribe to the Independence YouTube channel. Please subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Let's get to a few questions here, Pete. Friend of the show, who I spoke to yesterday, Juan Jose Rodriguez. Do you have the plus minus change on all games? If so, what remaining games are the biggest decrease in percentage chance of win? This one came in earlier, so I assume it's about the FPI metrics with Notre Dame's remaining schedule.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest change up is Florida State. That's, you know, not even close. That's up 20 from 70.5% to 93%. The other ones are pretty static. USC actually has dropped from a 62% chance down to a 51% chance. Army's down a little bit, 96% to 89%. Georgia Tech down 5% from, I'm sorry, that's Navy down from 97% to 92%. Georgia Tech is roughly identical. Stanford up a little bit. So it not a ton of changes in terms of those percentages, but yeah, overall, like I think Notre Dame started the year with, I think, a 10.5% chance to win out. Obviously, that's not happening. But from here, they've got a 29% chance to win out. And interestingly enough, going into the Purdue game, Notre Dame had a 5% chance of winning out. So that clearly has been on the rise ever since then. And in Louisville, they got a pretty big bump from that.
I'd imagine. Ant_VR says, I want to make the playoff, but I'd rather see what we have in backup QB than enter the playoffs with this version of the offense if this version of the offense continues. I don't think that's an either or, independent of the premise of the question, which again, I still say playoff. I mean, the bowl schedule and the playoff schedule being what they are this year, first bowl game this year, which is the Camellia Bowl, is Saturday, December 14th. The playoff starts that Friday. with a first round game December 20th. The portal being what it is, I believe it opens on December 9th this year. National Signing Day is December 4th this year. Like, I don't think you can schedule, you know, if you don't make the playoff, I'm not sure there's a needle to thread as far as, all right, we're going to play in this game with this quarterback and figure things out. I think it's going to be all hell breaking loose right when the final gun ends on the regular season. If you're in the playoff, you're going to probably hang on to your roster for the most part until your season's over. If you're not in the playoff, between coaching changes, position changes, et cetera, like, you know, I don't think there's any guarantee if Notre Dame doesn't make the playoff, you'll have whoever you think you're going to have for a 13th game.
Yeah, that would be a good way to see the backup quarterback not make the playoff, because I think that would probably happen. I would also, but
I'm still
not
sure the backup quarterback's not going to transfer immediately.
Yeah, that's possible too. Might be a CJ Carr in the Pop-Tarts Bowl, but I agree with like sort of the tone of the question. Like, I don't think Notre Dame will make the playoff with this version of the offense. That's not probably going to be good enough to navigate the rest of the schedule. Could you make it purely based on how they played against Louisville? If you could recreate that seven more times? Yeah. But to do something once in a five game sample set, you got to show me a few more times that you're capable of that kind of offense.
You had a follow up here with this defense. It'd be a travesty to not see what the ceiling on this offense could be. I agree. Yeah. Hopefully the defense, you know, is close to healthy by the end of the year. Obviously some guys are not going to be coming back, but I agree. Now I will say, you know, the analogy you just mentioned, I mean, this USC team, which is, again, is probably the biggest roadblock between Notre Dame and the playoff right now. They lost to Michigan, a Michigan team that threw for 32 yards. So they are beatable.
That's also exactly how Notre Dame would like to beat you.
Yeah. Or pick six from Will Johnson, pick six from Benjamin Morrison.
Right there
you go. But yeah, things will look different for everyone, I think, by the end of November. Patrick Carter says that's Ashton Gentry's lose. I assume that's about the Doak Walker Award. I agree completely. That guy's on another level right now.
What year is he, by the way?
Senior, junior.
Okay, all right. So won't be playing in Notre Dame Stadium next year is kind of what I was getting at there.
If Notre Dame throws him an NIL package, maybe. he is a junior, actually. So
okay. Yeah, I would have loved to have seen a Jeremiah Love, Ashton Gentry running back matchup next season at Notre Dame Stadium. But the way I think Gentry's still averaging more than 10 yards per carry, that's probably not going to happen.
That's the other thing. The Heisman race, I think, is a little more interesting, because I think if your team makes the playoff, like Boise State might, you're in that national conversation, have a chance to make it to New York in a way that you probably didn't before. Patrick Carter also adds, Xwas is playing great, but likely won't repeat as Nagurski. Funny enough, while we were recording this, Jordan Clark dropped his latest clip from the Irish Scoop podcast. And the excerpt they post is Xavier Watts saying he thinks he could go both ways, like Travis Hunter did, quote, oh, 100%. I'd probably be a slot guy, get some blocks in. I'll be a good YAC guy, end quote. He was a receiver, if I'm not mistaken. So
good,
I don't think
one in high school, too.
It's completely out of the realm of possibility. You know, Ant adds, won't Hunter win Thorpe? Yeah, and I would. The season ended today, and it doesn't. But if, you know, we're judging on a five-game season, I think it's Travis Hunter, it's Ashton Gentry, and that's everyone else as far as Heisman. Now, will both those two continue at their current rate over 12 games? Probably not. But yeah, Hunter is in prime position to do a lot of good things this year. And Colorado's actually a lot better than I thought they'd be so far as well. Beef Eater NDO8. What a game. Walking into the stadium, we saw Chris Zorich taking pictures. 100 feet later, Pete Sampson chatting with someone. 100 feet after that, a chat with Mr. Onyeh. They ended meeting Dickie V. So you met all those guys and you didn't actually meet Pete. That sounds like an awesome day, I got to say. Like, you really
you just saw me from a distance. I mean, I was apparently too popular for this for Beefeater ND08 to come up and say hello.
Your security team from 100
talking feet to somebody else.
Stay away. Go talk to Dickie V. He's much more approachable and famous.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
Patrick Walsh, did anyone else expect so much more from Chris Mitchell? He's been a complete non-factor so far. Yeah, and I would say that about pretty much everyone on that receiving core, with the exception of maybe Bo Collins, who's
definitely
one of the best among them and has made the biggest catches among them. On paper, the stats don't jump out, but it's hard to complain about what he's given you so far. Yeah. But I would agree. You know, I actually, after the Alabama game Saturday night when Ryan Williams just went crazy, I wanted to see. So Ryan Williams, the 17-year-old freshman from Alabama, has 462 receiving yards through four games. And I wanted to see if that was more. I was like, Notre Dame was my premise because we were just talking about them on the podcast. I want to see what Notre Dame's receivers have done and what some other notable Power 5, Power 4 teams that have struggled in the passing game have done so far. It's actually not nearly as bad for Notre Dame as it is for some others. Notre Dame's receivers, again, strictly wide receivers through five games have 607 receiving yards. Wisconsin's at 606 through four. A&M's at 596 through five. That's really surprising to me. And yeah. Oklahoma is at 465 through five. And then Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, the other true freshman sensation, is at 364 through four. And I bring that up because both Williams and Smith have more receiving yards in four games than Michigan's receivers have through five games. Michigan's receivers have 234 receiving yards through five games. Iowa at 309 through four games, not much better. So, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame's actually the best among that group. Again, not exactly the greatest company to keep right now, but it's not as bad as it was last year. It's not as bad in real time as it seems. I think we were judging it such a high bar compared to last year. Again, we'll see what comes out of the bye. The schedule is going to lighten up a little bit. I imagine it will get better, but certainly, you know, to your point, Patrick, with Chris Mitchell, it's been a little disappointing so far. A lot of hypotheticals here. Regine, again, hope I'm pronouncing that right. Is it better to lose to Tennessee in the first round or close or to Bama in the second round by two dozen? I say Bama. A playoff win is a playoff win, especially over an SEC team.
Yeah.
Especially after your second SEC win this year.
If you went to Knoxville and won.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's to me, because it was, I think we're always sort of moving the goalpost on like successful season around a little bit. And like, it's always been, you had to win a game in the playoff, but if you beat like Tulane or Boise State in the first round, then I'd be like, you still probably need to win one. If you went on the road, or if you beat Tennessee at home in the first round and lost in the second round, to me, that would be a successful season.
Yeah. I would agree. Beef Eater NDOH chiming in. Pete was busy talking. I'm not that big of a, you know what? Pete does not bother me when I'm working. So man of the people.
Yes. I don't bother Beef Eater at the Gin Factory. I'm sorry. I will, but I would gladly take a tour.
It reminds me of when I was little and I was eating outside and I saw Derek Jeter eating outside across the street. And my mom said, you are not going up to him while he's eating. But we lived close. So I went up, got a baseball pen, came back as he was coming out and chased him down and got an autograph. But Derek Jeter, Pete Sampson, both bald, probably about the same age right now. I completely.
So much in common.
There's a good one here. Flyberg, I have to admit, you guys do have good merch and the logo is well done. Thank you. A reminder, obvioushirts.com. Get them now while they are hot. I think we'll get out of there on that note. Pete, I do want to ask one game this week that you're most excited to see. And what you think?
I think like the Michigan Washington game. I'm very intrigued by because I have not watched much of either of those teams this year. You know, Washington obviously is way down. Michigan is way down, but like you know that there's a lot of playoff implications there. For a minute, I want to check in on Alabama Vanderbilt to see our old friend Clark Lee, but I'm not sure that's one that I'd be staying with. I know Indiana Northwestern obviously is high on the list.
By the way, Alabama plays LSU at the same time. Notre Dame plays Florida State. I wonder what the ratings comparison will be for those two. I'm not really. I mean, Michigan Washington's interesting because it's like, oh yeah, like the NBC commercial for it's like rematch the national championship. I'm like, oh yeah, like
yeah,
it was a national championship last year. I don't think either team is particularly good. I think Michigan's a little bit like Iowa in the sense of like they might go 10-2, but they might also go 6-6. So every week's worth 10-2 for that regard. Mine's the team we started off talking about, Texas A&M. They play at noon at home against Missouri, number 9 against I think number 25. A&M's a 2.5-point favorite. They've looked different with Marcel Reed, a quarterback, to the point where I'm like, did they start the wrong guy? And would the result have been different in week one had he played over Connor Wegman, who was not good at all against Notre Dame? But you look at A&M's schedule relative to some of the other SEC teams, and it is very light. And all their tough games, this one, Texas at the end, they're all at home. Like, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but you could talk me into saying Texas A&M could play in the SEC championship this year. Now, every game has been close for the most part other than Florida so far, so they could easily not. But I think we'll learn a lot about both teams this year. I think this is almost like a SEC elimination game, if you will, with this one. Again, A&M's favored in this one, probably for the same reasons they were favored over a better Notre Dame team in week one. But I think that's the most intriguing game, both from an on-field standpoint, obviously from an implications for Notre Dame standpoint, because the better A&M plays the rest of the year, the better it is for Notre Dame, the more weight that win will carry. A couple more came out. I want to make sure we get in. Coldest Brian says, live show for Yankee Stadium. Should be in New Haven, Connecticut, so you guys can get the best pizza in the country. So I've heard, although if we did a live show in New York, I don't think we would do it in New Haven. And we would still have great pizza. I can promise you that. Beefeater ND08, one more. Jeter always stole my seat at Wensley's Grill. Smith & Wells, great, great spot. Great one in Chicago as well, although the original New York is awesome. So I take it, it's another New Yorker. And us New Yorkers do not get fazed by big people like Pete Sampson walking by. Like, Dickie V, yeah, okay. Pete, go on about your day. We want you fully prepped and locked in for the live show postgame, which I know you
absolutely are. All right. Well, on that note, we'll get into our bye week. Hope our listeners enjoy their bye week as well. But we'll be back midweek next week. We're not going to do a live show to update you on youth soccer results. But
Say, is there a big EPL match or whatever?
I mean, you said the game I'm most interested to see is Liverpool at Crystal Palace on Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m. at kick. So Burmeister's with me on that one. So until next week, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.